Your speaker is Claude Farr.
Turn, if you would, to the book of Deuteronomy. We'll begin our lesson this morning there. We do appreciate everyone who is with us this morning, and we're especially appreciative of those who are visiting with us and want you to come back and be with us at every opportunity that you have. This morning I'm going to be talking about wrong-headed worship. And As I was typing the title of this, I was kind of wondering about wrong-headed. Is that a one word or two? I typed it in as two words, but then I put them together, and according to my spell check, that's one good English word, wrong-headed. And so that's the way we'll use it this morning. Now, I was also informed this morning that while it might be a word in English, it's not necessarily politically correct. And that may be true, too, that it is not politically correct to speak of things, particular things done in worship, as being wrong-headed. But sometimes you say things, even though you think maybe they're not the most appropriate way of saying it. A number of years ago, Brother M.B. Hardiman, the story goes at least, I think it is a true story, he was an eloquent speaker, immaculate English, didn't make the kind of mistakes that I often make, but he was preaching one time, and he said something, and it was not correct English grammar, but he wanted everybody to know that he did that deliberately, so he said, you know, I know that's not correct English, but that's the onlyest way to say it. And so sometimes we use words just for a point, and I've used the expression wrong-headed this morning to kind of talk about something, the wrong-headed worship, and that is ways in which God has made it clear that He does not want us to worship Him. And what we're going to do first is look at about three different selections from the Old Testament, passages that will help us to understand God's attitude. Now, we recognize that we're not under the law of the Old Testament. We don't offer animal sacrifices. We don't burn incense. We don't use instruments of music in our worship. There are many things that we find in the Old Testament that we do not use. But, however, the New Testament does tell us in a number of passages, one particularly in Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, that the things that were written aforetime were written for our learning. In other words, we can learn some principles and things about what God is like and what God desires from some of the lessons from the Old Testament. Now, in the book of Numbers, the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is speaking to the people, giving some last speeches before his death, and he's given them kind of a review of God's instructions. And some of those instructions have to do with their worship. And I want to read a selection or two from Deuteronomy chapter 12. If you will, look at verses 2 and 3 with me. You shall utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations which ye shall possess serve their gods, upon the high mountains, and upon the hills, and upon every green tree. And ye shall overthrow their altars, break down their pillars, and burn their groves with fire, and ye shall hewn down the graven images of their gods, and destroy the names of them out of the place. In other words, the Lord is saying that when you come into the land of Canaan, which I'm going to give you, and the present inhabitants, because of their wickedness, are going to be driven out, I don't want you to leave their places of worship standing. I want you to tear down the altars that they use in worshiping their idols. I want you to destroy the places on the high mountains and all the different places where they worshiped idols. I want those things all completely destroyed. Now, we know that God has forbidden the worship of idols. And that, of course, is in the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, God said, Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Thou shalt not bow down before them and worship them. That's just one place. God made it very clear that He did not want His people worshiping idols. But now that's not what's going on here. Now this is talking about destroying the places where they worshiped idols. And in many places they're forbidden from worshiping idols. But there's something else involved in this chapter that is very important. And you'll note that as we read the very next verse. Look at verse 4. Ye shall not do so unto the Lord your God, but unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose out of all your tribes to put His name, even upon the habitation shall ye seek, and thither thou shalt come. So, worshiping of idols was forbidden. But the particular thing that is being forbidden here is the worship of God, the true God, but worshiping Him after the manner of and in the place of the worshiping of idols. In other words, the worship of the Lord is what they were supposed to do, but in worshiping the Lord, they must not pattern their worship after the practices of the heathen. And particularly in these two verses, with regard to the place of worship. God would have His own place. But then that principle, of course, runs all the way through this chapter. And look down toward the end of the chapter. And I want you to look at verses 30 and 31. Take heed to thyself, that thou be not snared by following them, that is, the people of the land, after that they be destroyed from before you, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so will we do likewise. In other words, you're not supposed to ask the question, now how did they serve their idols? And, well, this is what they did in worship of their idols, so we'll do this in worship to our true God. And then verse 31, thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God. Now, one of the despicable things that they did in the worship of their idols was to offer their children and burn them in the fire as sacrifices. But there were many other things. That's just one that happens to be mentioned here. And so what this whole chapter is saying is that you will see when you go into the land, you will see that the people have their own way of worshiping their idols. Now, you're not supposed to worship idols. But also, this chapter is saying, you're not supposed to copy the manner of worshiping and worship the Lord in that fashion. But the last verse tells them exactly the way they're supposed to worship. Verse 32. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. Thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish aught from it. In other words, the Lord has said, I'm going to tell you exactly how I want you to worship. Don't want you to add anything to that. Don't want you to take anything away from that. And particularly, the emphasis of this chapter is, I don't want you to look around and see how others have been worshiping their gods, and you start worshiping it that way. I don't want you copying those other people in how they worship. I want you to worship exactly like I tell you to. Now, that's a principle that you find in the Old Testament. And it's very relevant in our world today. For us in the church, it means that we're to worship God just as He has told us to worship Him. We're not to look around and see what other people are doing and say, oh, that looks good to me. I'll do that. Now, many of you may know what I refer to when I refer to change agents in the church. A number of years ago, there was a young woman who came to a certain congregation where I was preaching, and she's since left there, but she said, you know, I'm an agent of change. And the term change agent has been kind of coined and used to represent a group of people who are trying in the church to make some changes in worship. And I want to just mention a few of those things that we notice, and just kind of point out that what is happening when people are calling for change in worship, what they're doing is looking around and seeing what other people are doing and saying, well, let's copy what they're doing in worshiping the Lord. One of the things that is being done in some churches today is what is called a praise team. A praise team, if you don't know what it is, means that instead of just having congregational singing like we have had this morning, and like the Bible teaches, that you have a group to stand up in front, four or five, each singing their special parts, and they'll have mics. And they will kind of override the singing of the congregation. It becomes almost a performance in some cases. And there's a praise. And so some of the change agents in the churches today are trying to bring in praise teams into the church. Well, they didn't search the Scriptures and find that. They didn't read the New Testament and come up with that idea. What they did is they looked at television, or they saw what some other religious people were doing, and they copied it. And that's contrary to the very principle that's being taught about here. Don't look around you, see how other people are doing it, and worship me, God says, in that way, but worship me exactly as I tell you. Don't add to, don't take away from. Do things exactly like I tell you. There's another thing that you sometimes see in worship services, and that some are trying to bring in even into the churches of Christ. And that is the idea that during worship you lift up your hands. And usually with that there's a little bit of swinging and swaying going with that and so forth. Well, where did that come from? Well, people did not search the Scriptures and find that you're supposed to lift up hands and worship to God. I know there's a passage that sometimes people try to use to justify that, but it's, of course, talking about something entirely different. But they didn't look and find that in the New Testament. What they did is, they watched worship services on television, or they visited some services somewhere else, and they saw other people doing that. And since others were doing, they decided that would be a good thing to do. And so they copied. And of course, you could go on and on with a number of the things that people are trying to bring into churches today, into the church. And there are people who are just looking around. They see what others are doing, and they're saying, well, let's worship the Lord that way. But the Lord has made it very clear that I don't want you to copy what you see in the world about you in worshiping me. What I want you to do is to do exactly what I tell you to do. I don't want you to add to it. I don't want you to take away from it. I want you to do worship and serve me exactly the way I tell you. It's wrong-headed worship, to use my title. It's wrong-headed worship to look around and see what others in the world are doing and saying, hey, let's do that too. Right-minded worship looks into the Bible and says, this is what God teaches. This is what I'll do, neither adding to nor taking away. Then there's another passage about a wrong-headed worship that I want to notice. And this is over in 1 Kings, if you want to turn to that. 1 Kings chapter 12. This is Jeroboam. And kind of make sure we bring us all up to speed as to who Jeroboam is and the circumstances of the times here. There were three kings that ruled in Jerusalem over the entire kingdom of Israel. There was King Saul, who ruled 40 years. King David, who ruled 40 years, and then Solomon, his son, who ruled for 40 years. But then after Solomon's rule, his son Rehoboam became the king in Jerusalem, but the kingdom split. And this man that we're talking about here, Jeroboam, he took the 10 northern tribes, and that became a separate kingdom, the northern kingdom as opposed to the southern kingdom. And that's the circumstances we're talking about here. And what I want us to notice is the change and the why of the change that Jeroboam made in the worship of God. And look at 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 27. And this is Jeroboam speaking. I'll start in verse 26. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David, that is to its descendant, Rehoboam. If this people go up to sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, the king of Judah. Now here's what Jeroboam is saying to himself. Is I have these 10 tribes, I'm ruling over them. But now God has said, and they've done this for years now, and God has said, go to Jerusalem to worship me under the Old Testament system. Go to Jerusalem. But Jeroboam said to himself, these people living up north here with me and that I'm ruling over, if they go down south to Jerusalem and worship, then they'll become loyal to the king of the south, to Rehoboam. And so he said, I'm going to have to do something. And so what he did is, as the rest of this text says, what he did is he put up an altar, two altars for worship, not at Jerusalem where it was supposed to be, but one in Bethel and one in Dan, the north, way up north. And he said to the people of his kingdom, he says, don't go to Jerusalem to worship. It's too far. Come to Bethel. Come to Dan. Worship there. And so they did. But now the thing I want you to really notice is the motivation for it. And that's that verse again. Let me just read that again, verse 27 of this chapter. If this people go up to sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then will the heart of this people turn again to the Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah. In other words, the reason that he changed the worship was to hold the people. That's exactly why he did that. Jeroboam knew what God had said about worship in Jerusalem, but he wanted to hold the people. Now that's a very relevant thing for us today. Because in the church today, many things are being motivated by not what the Word of God says, but many things are being done for the very purpose of simply holding the people. Sometimes it's said we've got to hold the young people. Now, I'm for holding the young people. I like young people. Even though, as you know from my birthday, I'm not quite a young person anymore. But I'm for holding the young people. But you hold the young people by teaching them the truth and making them solid, not by changing things that God has ordained in such a way as to try to hold the young people. There has been a big movement in the church of Christ, and also in Christendom worldwide, there's been a great movement toward church growth. Usually it's referred to as the church growth movement. And the idea of the church growth movement is to make everything visitor-friendly so that you can attract people and then that you can hold the people. And that's the way the church is to grow. And so, whatever works, then let's do it. And many things are being done in worship and in churches today, and they're not being done because people read that in the Bible and said, this is what the Lord wants us to do, but it's because we want to attract people and we want to hold the people. Well, that's what Jeroboam did. And he was condemned. God condemned him. That altar that he built, the Lord sent a prophet down there, and that altar split and was destroyed because he disobeyed God. But he was doing that for the very purpose of holding the people. Two wrong-headed worships. One is to look around and say, well, they're doing it, we'll do it too, even though it's not in the Scriptures. And the other is, well, we've got to do this to hold the people. No. What you need to do is always worship God according to His Word. And then there's one last Old Testament passage that I want to look at, and this is the book of Amos. Amos is one of the minor prophets in the Old Testament, and he's speaking about worship and condemning the people of his day for wrong worship. And look with me, if you would, in Amos chapter 4, and I'll read verses 4 and 5. He's speaking kind of tongue-in-cheek here, and you'll notice that as I read this. He says, come to Bethel and transgress. Obviously, that's tongue-in-cheek. You don't really want... He's condemning them for going to Bethel, because when they do that, they're transgressing God's law. So, come to Bethel and transgress. At Gilgal, multiply transgressions. And bring your sacrifices every morning and your tithe after 3 years. And offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving with leaven. And proclaim and publish the free will offerings. For this liketh you to do, ye children of Israel, saith the Lord. Now, what Amos is talking about is this same idea of not going to Jerusalem to worship where the Lord under that period had said for them to worship. But they wanted to worship at Bethel. Now, you know, if you know your Bible history, you can make a good, strong argument for wanting to go to Bethel to worship. Bethel, you find in the book of Genesis, is where the story of Jacob's ladder is, that famous story. And the word Bethel, the name, means God's house. And so you can make a strong case from the history of Israel and from the name of the place itself that that'd be a good place to go worship. Gilgal would also be a good place, according to human reasoning, to worship because there had been a time in which Gilgal was the place of worship. But what Amos is saying, God has said, Jerusalem, when you go to Bethel, when you go to Gilgal, then you've disobeyed God. But what I want you to notice from this is why they were doing this. Amos says that in the very last part, what I read. For this liketh ye, O ye children of Israel. Or as the footnote says, so ye love. In other words, these people were worshiping God, not as God pleased. Not as God had said in His Word, but they were worshiping the way that suited them. They liked it that way. It pleased them. And you know, a lot of people, that's the way they look at worship today. They look at it and they say, well, you know, I like it. You know, it's uplifting to me. It's inspiring. I go away feeling good. Lots of people worship God today, and they're worshiping just like those people Amos condemned. They're worshiping the way they love to do it, rather than what God said. And so there's three examples from the Old Testament of wrong-headed worship. Looking around you and seeing what others are doing. Say, hey, we want to do that. Or saying, you know, we've got to make these changes. We've got to do these things to hold the people. Or, you know, this is the way I like it. All of those are wrong ways of worshiping. But now the right way for worshiping is the way Jesus presented it. And I want us to look at one more passage. And this is in the book of John, the New Testament, chapter 4. Jesus is talking to a woman of Samaria, and she asked him about worship. She says, you know, Jews say you're supposed to worship in Jerusalem. And she was a Samaritan. And she says, my father say you're supposed to worship in this mountain, which was Mount Gerizim. And she's asking Jesus, because she understands he's a prophet, you know, where are we supposed to worship? And Jesus says, it don't make any difference. Where? That's not the point. The time is coming, it's right now, that whether it's in Jerusalem or on Mount Gerizim, that's not what's going to count. But what's going to count is this. And Jesus explains the true meaning of worship. Verse 23. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipper shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship Him. God is a Spirit, and they that worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now that's what Jesus says. True worship is not what you see other people doing. True worship is not what you can do to hold the people. And true worship is not just the way you like it. But true worship is worshiping God in spirit and in truth. That's what Jesus said. We need to understand both of those, because both of those things are necessary if your worship is going to be acceptable to God. To worship in spirit simply means, as we'd put it, your heart's in it. You know, God's not interested in somebody who will just sit here and take of the bread and the fruit of the vine and think about what you're going to have for lunch or what you're going to do this afternoon, because your heart's not in it. Your spirit, your inner being is not in it. God's not interested in you just singing the songs that we sing that you know so well, and you sing, you can sing them without even thinking about them. I mean, you can do that. We can. God's interested in you singing those songs and having your heart in it. And so it is with worship, in spirit. God looks for someone who really put their heart, their soul, their spirit in the worship. And it's very easy, you know, when you grow up going to church all your life, to kind of miss that. I remember years ago when I was preaching, very young man then, and was preaching a place, and I talked about worship, and afterwards there was this young lady that came out. She was probably my age or a little bit younger, young married woman. And she was just surprised to hear that. It really helped her a great deal. Well, she grew up going to church all her life. She'd done all the things. But she had not really gotten it in her head and in her heart that for her to really be worshiping God properly, she had to put her heart in it. It had to come from the soul, from the inside. And she had to have thoughtful participation in the worship. Well, that's what Jesus is talking about when He says worship in spirit. But He says that the true worship must worship not only in spirit, but in truth. And as the Gospel of John says a little bit later, thy word is truth. It's not enough just to have your heart in what you're doing when you're serving God. But you have to be doing it according to God's directions or God's truth. And so God has told us exactly what we're supposed to do in worship. And that's what we try to do in our services every Sunday. Just what God says. And for you to worship God and to be, it's not enough just to do everything right. You got to have your heart in it. It's not enough just to have your heart in it. You got to do everything right. See, both. Jesus said, the true worshiper worships God in spirit and in truth. And we need to always do that. We don't need to look about us and see what other people are doing. We don't need to kind of decide, this is what I like. Or we don't need to say, this is what will hold people and attract people. But we need to know just what God says and do that. And when we do that, heart in it. And that's the kind of worship that is acceptable to God. We haven't talked about how to become a Christian, but basically to become a Christian, you need to do this. You've got to believe in God and in Christ and put your faith there. That means more than believing in the existence of God and Christ, but it means putting your trust there, your trust. And then you've got to repent. And that word just simply means you make a change in your mind and in your heart to start serving God, to do what's right, turn away from evil, and do right. And then you confess your faith and you're baptized for the remission of sins. And when you come up out of the waters of baptism, then you begin that new life as a Christian. And then you can worship Him in spirit and in truth.